Hello guys, thanks for joining in. This is the Game Week stream for FPL Game Week 3, and today I have Aditya and Sankal. Sorry for the delay for a few minutes, but here we are and rolling. A bit of an announcement before we go in. So we'll have Sankal on the stream regularly going forward. So he's someone that's been a massive asset to the blog for a while now. And then he's had a great season last year. He finished in the top 500. So it's glad to have you, Sankar, as part of the stream. Yeah. Looking forward to the content ahead. Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. So game week two was a bit of a fun game week in terms of FPL. A popular captain choice blanked. One that was supposed to get score a hat trick actually got only an assist. That was actually kind of a shock bummer for a lot of managers because the whole agenda was to move from Kane to Haaland, and then in the end, Kane scored and Haaland didn't do exceedingly well enough in that game. But overall, there was a lot of eye-catching things that happened. For instance, Cucurella was very massive for Chelsea, for Rodrigo proved to be a vital asset for Leeds, and then Brentford thrashed Man United. But also in a sense that there's a lot of Brentford assets that we could talk upon in today's episode. But I'll quickly brief you through the numbers that happened, both from a team perspective and a player perspective. Here's a beautiful graph that we have, which says the player's contribution towards a team's performance and PXG performance. And Rodrigo, Gabriel, Jesus, Zaha, these three players, of course, were their team's talisman this time around. Zaha particularly had three big chances at Anfield. That was quite interesting. Liverpool conceding four big chances in Anfield, that's something that's not happened very often. Same with Rodrigo. Rodrigo had like 67% of Leeds XG. He's proving to be an asset that's doing exceedingly well. A few of us talked upon him before the season started, but he's somehow done even better. Like, he stepped up in place of Bamford's absence as he was injured. A few other players that kind of caught the stats are Gross. He once again proved to be Brighton's main man. They didn't score, but still had the numbers. This is from a team's player's point of view. Moving on to team's point of view, Arsenal are doing exceedingly well. I think the smile on Sankar's face can tell that. Same with Liverpool. Liverpool are kind of unfortunate, I would say, because they created chance after chance, but then still couldn't get the goals flowing. City and Arsenal, the interesting fact here is that City and Arsenal are level, and Arsenal are going to face the team City faced in game week 2. So it's going to be a lot more goals, at least from my prediction for Arsenal this week as well. A few other teams that did well were West Ham. West Ham again were unlucky to not score a goal. They kept hitting the post, they missed the penalty, and Forest's home game was not an easy place to go, but still West Ham are decent enough. Similarly, in terms of Chelsea did well, and they should have walked off with a victory, but that didn't happen that day for obvious reasons. So this is in terms of teams that did well. The whipping boys, I think it's still early days to say who's the team to target, but Leicester defense is one as such. They've not been clicking well. The goalkeeper situation is not sorted. They have been leaking goals. I touched upon Liverpool, surprise entry here, but it should be one-off. And Everton too conceded a lot more big chances against Aston Villa. And luckily, they scored a goal which wiped out Aston Villa's clean sheet in the first place. So that's with what happened in game week 2. Over to Sankar. Any player teams that caught your eye, Sankar?
Yeah, I think, post first game week, most of the serious FPL managers nowadays don't use any transfers right in the game week 2. Now that we have 2 weeks data, it is good enough sample for people to start acting. Like you said, Arsenal is looking good. City are looking good from an attacking point of view, right? So people who moved out of Jesus last week, deeply regretted. 19-pointer is something none of us expected, but that's the potential now that we can expect, right? The ceiling is now at 19 for Jesus, especially at home games. So that's something to look at. Chelsea, I think, looked really strong, really, really strong. I didn't expect them to be honest, I was going into the game thinking, okay, Spurs are going to dominate it. But it was completely different match on the field. I think Tuchel has turned it around really fast, compared to the preseason match when they lost to us 4-0, and Tuchel was complaining that, the team is not ready, it's not where we want it to be. But this is a completely different team. And Cucurella looks really, really strong asset now. A 5 million Chelsea fullback. Even if whether it's whether he plays as an LCB or as a left wing back, I think either ways, Cucurella is a really strong asset, someone to look out for. These are my initial thoughts, at least.
Over to you, Aditya. I know you're a United fan, so any positives out of that game week?
Positives in the sense, keeping United aside. I've been, yes, Uncle Pivan spoke. Chelsea looked good. Cucurella was great. Especially, he has the set piece also, right, to his list now. So he's taking the set piece from the left side now. So that is an added bonus for people debating with a City defender like Walker or so or just to target the shorter spell of the games now. So Cucurella looked good. West Ham had a lot of attempts against Forest. It didn't go in. It was like a game of FIFA. Like the ball was not going to go in. And I mean, City was City. Liverpool dropped points again. I mean, Everton, I think Gordon looked good for some part. He scored a goal that was ruled out offside. So again, that Dini scoring a known goal, that was very much expected to happen, but it happened right away in the second week itself. So, but a minus one is better than minus three or four. So it's fine. I mean, game week two was good. Arsenal again playing well, and I think we'll look forward to game week three and see. I mean, the more data we get, I think we'll be able to take, better decisions from them.
Yeah, and just want to add, teams which are not looking good, right? Liverpool and Spurs, right, are the two teams where most of us, went in some form or other, whether it was Kane, Son, or Perisic, right? It's something now we have to start thinking, right? Maybe we'll look at one more game week, but this is the game week where people can do a major, minor rejig. You can have a few changes and go for a minus four, right? And it's something difficult, right? Because now you are in that conundrum. You know these are solid assets, but at the same time, we can see Salah is not settled. Son does not look anywhere close to his best, right? So what do we do with him?
Exactly. In terms of, we shouldn't be tied down by the nostalgia factor of these players have done well, so we have to tie them down. Because Arsenal, over the last 3 4 seasons, weren't a major FPL force, but by the looks of it, if they're playing the way they did at Emirates, I think they're going to be strong captaincy choices going forward. So it's something that's very interesting to look on. Moving on to the next section, wherein we'll take three fixtures to target for game week three. And without a surprise, the United Liverpool fixture is there. Same with the Arsenal Bournemouth game. And we've also picked up Spurs versus Wolves as a fixture to target. So we'll go player fixture by fixture, team by team, and then the players to target from these. So Sankar, you touched upon Liverpool not looking settled. So what do you think of this United versus Liverpool game? Because it's game week eight coming early this season from last year. So yeah, what's your take on Salah and Liverpool's assets right now?
So, if Darwin Nunez was playing in this match, I would have been a bit more terrified as a Salah owner, because I think those two have not really gelled together. While I know, Nunez gave some kind of assist to Salah, in the game week one, right? But somehow Salah is not able to come out on his own, with Nunez taking those central spaces, and the way they are interacting, right? And today we got the news that Firmino is expected to start. So that's the reason I'm expecting a bit of a different, Salah. And at the same time, I'm a huge believer in, mentality of squads of players, right? And Klopp, he has two easy matches which they have drawn, and now they're going away to Old Trafford. He will be on his players this entire week. He'll be ensuring that they are ready. And unfortunately, we have, Ten Hag, who's a very good coach, but he does not have the same time. He's not had his team settled. In fact, they are looking far away from settled. The defense needs time. And I think something to note here will be, what is the decision that, Ten Hag takes? Does he still want to stick to his philosophy, or does he want to make an exception for this week, right? If he wants to stick to his philosophy, which most of the people expect him to, then Salah can have a field day. Because if they are still building from the back with Raya, you know, Maguire and Martinez, I would love to captain Salah. But if
Yeah.
they change things, then it might change things a bit, right? So it's more of a, you know, Tom and Jerry kind of a guessing game for us, that we have to guess how things will be and take a call accordingly.
Yeah. Aditya, would you see anything different from a United team, especially going to play Liverpool at home? The stakes are really high, but there's also a chance if United win, they could actually overpass Liverpool. At least that's a small bragging right that's needed for the team. So what's your thinking? Like, would United do anything that would be different, be a bit more pragmatic in terms of approach, try to solidify our position in the field?
I started this season having Rashford in my squad, and I'm going to get him out this week. I think that should pretty much answer most of your questions.
Yeah.
But other than that, that being said, it's been horrific the last two games, you know, getting battered, one at home and one away from home, two slaps on our faces.
Yeah.
And this game is something you have to get a point or a win, and you're playing at home. There's no chance of you to, you know, drop points now or at least play horrible.
Yeah.
But you might see altogether a different defense playing.
Yeah.
There are high chances of Malaysia, Varane, Martinez, and Dalot playing with De Gea. Obviously, there's no other keeper. I mean, there are rumors of Sommer and all going on over the last few days.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen anything.
Yeah.
So, if he plays a different backline with Martinez, who is aggressive, who sweeps, and with Varane, who can also complement him well, I think in the second half, we could notice a difference when Varane came on. And there was a significant difference. And with Malaysia, was even helping out Rashford. So we could see something improved on the left-hand side. So if he plays with a different back line and not playing Eriksen in that deeper role, because that is something he can't. So we could see a better United play. But all with these news popping out over the last 24 to 48 hours about the dressing room fight on Thursday before the game, United players upset with Ronaldo and all those are basically some things you don't want to hear from a team and not from a team that is going to play a big game. That is a derby sort of. You cannot mess up now.
Yeah.
So there's a lot at stake for them. There's a lot at stake for Ten Hag, but we all know who's the problem at Manchester United. I don't need to discuss
that.
Right on the top. So once we all know, we should all think about that. So if a manager doesn't get what he wants, the players...
Yeah.
So what we can see. So hopefully we can put up a decent show rather than getting battered 4-0 finding.
Yeah.
And we'll see how things go. But I am not that optimistic, but I hope for the best.
Yeah. So
do you think they'll sit back or do you think they'll attack, you know, continue playing from the back?
I think...
Well, that is a tough question.
Yeah, I think I've followed Ajax for a while and I've never seen a Ten Hag team sit back. So, but it's again, as you said, it's whether he adapts to the situation or he says, I stick by it. But looks by it, he doesn't have a plan B or plan C so far because he's stuck by what he's had in one way or the other. But I really hope he sits back at least for 30, 45 minutes, get that confidence, and then probably use Rashford's pace. There are some glaring issues in Liverpool's backline as well. There is no Thiago, there's some problems there. But you can't go because this team is not built to press right from the word go. Like, again, under Ralf, like we did for 45 minutes against Palace and then we never did that efficiently later. So maybe you sit back for at least one half and then later go all in and see if it works out. I think at least a draw. I think this game ends in a draw, maybe because it's high stakes for both, both the teams. Maybe both play a little bit more cautiously. So I'm not that confident that Salah could return like what he did last time at Old Trafford, but he's still a really, really good captaincy choice. Yeah. So enough of, I think, a lot more of United. So I'll move to the next fixture. Sankalp's and Arsenal's main man, Gabriel Jesus. He's 19 points. That was quite huge. If he scored in game week one, he would have been a good captaincy shout in game week two. Unfortunately, he didn't score and he wasn't in a lot of captaincy debate in game week two. But I always had in mind he should do well against Leicester. But it was too... I actually moved out, actually. I really wanted to captain him, but in the end, I was scared of Haaland and then I went Haaland. So what's your take, Sankar? Yeah, what's your take on Arsenal and Jesus mainly? Yeah.
Jesus has settled in very, very quickly in the team, you know, right from the preseason. First match that he came in, he's been scoring almost all the matches. I think the Palace match was the only match that he did not score. And Paris is not an easy team to play. He did make, you know, other players better. He created chances for very good chances for Martinelli as well as Odegaard, but he never got into a chance to score. But I think there will be slight difference in how we play home and away. Right?
Yeah.
It's something that people are not thinking of.
Yeah.
While we might have, again, Leicester is not a strong defensive team, so playing them at home is like one of the, you know, easiest fixes. And yes, he was a captainable asset, but it always made sense to, you know, go for Haaland, right?
Yeah.
It was City playing Bournemouth at home. Right? It was a simple thing to do. So we took the right call. It's just that it didn't work out that well.
Okay.
Against Bournemouth, again, Bournemouth is a team that is going to sit back. We saw it right from the first match, right? When Aston Villa played,
yeah.
They played Aston Villa. Yeah, so it's not going to be that easy. I do expect Arsenal to win, but
yeah.
I don't expect a, you know, 4-2 or a 3-1 kind of a score, and I expect it to be more of a 2-0, 2-1 kind of a game where they will sit back, they'll try to hit us on counter, and for us it's just that first goal, how soon we can get right to help us you know, open things up. Jesus looks like a solid you know, FPL asset for me. He's priced 8 million, that, but he's not an 8 million guy. You can see that very clearly, right? Just like Martinelli, right? He's priced 6 million, but you can see that he's equal to Saka as an asset now, right?
Yeah.
He's an 8 million guy, right? So these are the kind of assets you start with in a season and you just sit back and, you know, let them flourish, give them points as much as they can.
Interestingly, you pointed about the Saka-Martinelli debate. I am manager that went Saka, but on the pitch, there is not a lot of difference. Do you think Saka picks up, or do you think Martinelli keeps having that edge over him? Because from what I have seen, Martinelli has clearly outshined Saka, at least in the first two games. But Saka is someone that I've seen do well against low blocks, kind of teams that like Bournemouth. Martinelli could be, his pace couldn't come into effect, you know, against the team that's playing low block. So do you think that Bournemouth fixture is more of a game for Saka than Martinelli, or like your general opinions on Saka so far?
So overall, I really like Saka. I mean, you know, I think over long term, there will not be much of difference between Martinelli and Saka point wise. But at the end of the day, Martinelli is a cheaper asset, right? So that works in his favor. What has changed really is the connection between Jesus and Martinelli. The two Gabriels are, you know, running riot in defenses, and a lot of attacking rotations, you know, positional rotations we are seeing in Arsenal. And a lot of times, Martinelli is the guy who's, you know, drifting inside. So this is something that we touched upon when I wrote up my preseason Arsenal article as well. You know, Martinelli is the guy who's actually playing as a center forward, say 30% of the game, right? And that's a significant time that you're getting. So if you are a person who's looking to get someone, I would say go for Martinelli, right? But if you are someone who's at Saka, I don't think it makes sense to move to just this move. But in case you have it coupled with another move, because you are saving 1.8 million here, right?
Yeah,
if you are using that 1.8 million to upgrade somewhere really well, then I would say it makes sense, because at the end of the day, they will give you similar returns at some point of time, right? So why don't you do it now? Because with every game week, I think Martinelli price will keep increasing, at least for the next 4 to 5 weeks, right?
So if
this is something that we will do at some point of time, let's do it now.
In fact, I have Saka and I thought I'll bring in Martinelli as well to triple up, say down on Robbo, and then like bring in upgrade Bailey to Martinelli. That was I'm still debating whether to do it or not. I lose the 0.1 on Bailey yesterday night, but I think it should work, because it's a 6 million asset, an 8 million forward and an 8 million midfielder. It's immense value. Whether I do it or not,
is something that makes sense for you, right? The good thing about Saka is, you know, you have options like Madison, you have options like Kolo, right? So you know you can go out somewhere at some point of time, right? So that's the easy factor. Someone like Martinelli, there is no other guy. He's the best you know, player in that price. So just get him into your team as soon as possible.
Yeah, perfect. That makes a lot of sense. Aditya, do you have one of these two, or what's your plan in terms of Arsenal attack outside of Jesus?
At the moment, I have Ramsdale and then Gabriel Jesus. So,
okay.
My thinking at this point is, obviously, with Martinelli has risen twice in a span of last 3 days.
Yeah.
So one thing I'm really a bit surprised this season is, with the price rises, ups and drops are very quick. And generally, I expected Martinelli to just go up 0.1, but he went 0.2, and the drops have also been very quick.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're drifting off the topic. I will get in Martinelli for Rashford is what my plan is at the moment, but I'm a bit surprised with the pricing algorithms. I don't know how it's working this time. So,
yeah, we never know how it works. Yeah,
with that transparency is never there. But I think every season we have more and more managers playing the game, right? And, and that more new managers are coming in every season, right? So 5 million, 10 million new managers are coming in. And these are people who will be, you know, a very bit safety, right? Especially in the East. They'll be like, okay, Martinelli scored. Let me take Martinelli.
Let me take him.
These ones will be jumping. So, at least in the initial 5-6 weeks, I think this is something we'll have to now start expecting every season.
We'll have to stay calm. As in, okay, I understand these guys are excited, but okay.
But you know what they could have done is, see, for example, the Liverpool Palace game was on Monday.
Yeah.
And Martinelli had a price rise before the game week even ended.
Yeah.
So that was something which they could have done. Probably the rises should happen once the game week is done, which they didn't do. I don't know what they're doing, what's going on, but enough of the price race. We'll go to the next one.
The next one is another interesting fixture. Spurs, as Sankar mentioned in the beginning, they were expected to dominate Chelsea, but that didn't happen. They were in the back foot for most of the game. But Wolves, again, they are testing out a new back line. They've gone from a 3 at the back to 4 at the back. It's kind of still early days, but Son has not fired as expected. He's just got 1 assist in 2 games. Kane has got a goal. But they are premium assets. Like it's 11.5 million and 12 million priced assets. They've still not given as much as they're supposed to give for to justify their price range. But still, this Wolves game is kind of quite interesting. Wolves are prone to concede. It seems they're not still defensively strong enough like they've used to in the past season. What would you do, Sankalp, if you had someone like, say, Son or Kane? Like, because I've seen a lot of managers still sticking by Son as a captaincy option this game week. So what's your thoughts on both of them? Yeah.
To be honest, I had this situation with my team. I had Son. The plan for me was to sell Son to KDB last week. I got sucked into the Kane to Haaland move. I could not do it. And, having seen 2 game weeks of Son now, you can hope that he comes good, but the data is there, right? He does not look as good, right? It's right there in front of my eyes.
Yeah,
I had missed out on Martinelli. So my thought was get Son down to someone like Kulusevski, right? Where you know you still have Son, you still have a Spurs asset, and use the money to go somewhere to upgrade somewhere else, right? If you still have Son, of course, it makes sense to see out one more week. But the way Wolves play, they don't play a very open, a lot of us were thinking that, because they are going to go 4 at the back, they'll be completely open now. They'll be attacking a lot. But no, Laja is still a very practical manager. He's balancing his team. So I don't expect a 3-0, 4-0 or a 5-0 kind of a game. It might be a game where, you have 2 goals scored and Son scores both the goals. It is possible. But logically, it just makes sense to, move to better opportunities if you have free transfers as well.
Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah. So I think my opinion would be the same as in terms of Son, because again, that is nostalgia tied to Son of what he did last season. But so far, he's not shown anything that, say, he would have a 12 or 15 point haul. But he's still known to be a player that overdoes the XG. He's clinical and all that. But in terms of Spurs as a team, they are evolving as a unit together. Like, they're no longer a Son Kane team. The attack is evolving. The goals are coming from across the pitch. So that's a good sign for a team, for Conte. But from an FPL perspective, it's not that great news early into the season. So, yeah, that's my take. Althea, anything you want to add in terms of Son Kane, Conte, Spurs in general?
Yeah, I mean, Spurs managed to get a point with just 36% possession. So that is the way Conte plays. They stole a point towards the end. I think Richarlison, once he came on, Spurs were a bit threatening. So I think there was some switch in back 5 to back 4 or some change. So they looked a bit convincing, with Richarlison on. So I want to see what happens with Richarlison, whether when he starts to play a key role. But with Son and Kane, again, rightly said what both guys have spoken now. one point you're keeping them for the sake of them returning, another side you're losing the points that you could have got. So it's up to you where you find the balance. It's totally up to the personal preference.
So before we move out, I just want to talk about Perisic, because it's not just as if we don't talk about him. After talking about him all preseason, he looked good. He got the assist. And in my opinion, he comes into the team against Wolves. Does he make a big difference? Because there is still a lot of debate around downgrading Robbo to Perisic. You are on a wild card, Sankalp. So I want to bring this question to you. So did you think of a Spurs defender, or like say Perisic, or even say Emerson? He's been so far decent enough. Yeah.
Emerson, I will not go Emerson and Cesc Nance, because you know, these are the guys who can lose their place at any point of time. So I especially on wildcard, and knowing that I'm doing wildcard because my first draft didn't work out, right?
Yeah.
Now I'm a bit more cautious, right? I want to go for players who I am very much confident of. I don't want to carry that pain again. But I think the good thing about Spurs is we do have two good, you know, reliable, you know, journalists who are sharing, squad guesses, right? Where they're telling us what they expect from the squad. So I'm still going to wait. If I see Perisic is going to start and he's currently at 5.4, who knows, he might be even 5.3 by the time game X comes on.
Yeah.
I'm still, you know, waiting to see out that game, because if he starts, I think he'll be a tremendous asset.
Yeah.
Long term, again, he's not someone that you can be confident of, right? So it can be like you're going for him for this week, and you know next week you can go to Cucurella, right?
Yeah.
So it can be a short term move for you. But if you have him, I would say just wait for this news, right? Because in case you get the news from someone like O'Keefe that he's not starting, or Alistair Gold that he's not starting, it's just an easy sell to, you know, Cucurella for me.
That's a fair enough conclusion. So the next part of the stream is wildcard. Like, so it's a nice transition from what we spoke just now. So Sankalp has felt his draft didn't do well, so he's on a wild card. So I am leaving it all over to you to walk you through your ideology of behind this wildcard draft and this decision to wildcard early in game week 3. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. I think the most popular game week this season for Wildcard 1 is game week 9, right? Just after international break. That's how we logically do things, right?
Yeah.
And obviously, I've not started well because I started with a freemium model. I went with Kane and Son, and both of them flopped. So now at 4, I'm at 4, I think 4 million odd rank. I know rank-wise it's not that good, but I'm still 40 points behind 100k, right? And I don't want that gap to keep increasing, because 100k is where I want to be around game week 10 to 15 odd rank.
Yeah.
I mean, that will help me, you know, set my targets up, right? And that's the reason I want to attack it early. Now, there are two ways of doing it, right? Either you take hits and slowly restructure your team, or you do it early. Now, the first thing I wanted to think is, what is it that I'm losing I am not going game week 9? So if we can go to the fixtures bit once, I'll just talk about fixtures, right?
Yeah.
So if we look at game week 3 to 8, right? So say 6 weeks is the target that normally people pick up on a wild card. What are the best teams that I can see? I can see Arsenal there. I can see Leicester there. I can see Chelsea there, right? So for me, Arsenal and Chelsea are two trustable teams. I can see, having seen Chelsea match now, I can trust the defense. I can trust the assets. Attack, I'm still not very confident. But defense, especially Reece James and Cucurella, I did not go there because of the preseason friendlies. Now it makes sense for me to go there. And I want to double up. Because whenever I play a wild card, I want to go a bit differential so that I gain it. Because the priority of me playing a wildcard is to gain ranks, right? To get a one-up against others who are not doing that now. So that's how I've set up a double Chelsea, you know, defense, to see, you know, how much upside it can give it to me for people who will be just with Reece James. You know, there'll not be a lot of guys with a double Chelsea defense.
Yeah.
Arsenal, I had only Jesus. You know, I started a bit cautious, even though I'm an Arsenal fan, right? I used that as a bias against myself, and I started only with Jesus. And again, with a price point of view, it was not feasible with a premium to go Martinelli. That actually restricted me.
Yeah.
So now it was very easy for me to, you know, take Martinelli as well. So I've added Jesus and Martinelli to my team, right? Leicester is a team that now I am very, you know, looking forward to how they do, because they are a good attacking team. I don't look at the defense. We can have Ward as our bench goalkeeper. That's a different thing, but it's a good attacking team, right? And Maddison is a player who's already on form. And Brendan Rodgers spoke about him being in this form of his life. You look at the fixtures look good over 5-6 weeks, right?
Yeah.
These are the teams now I've started. I'm thinking, okay, these are the good things that I can, good teams where I can, you know, create some sort of difference. Now, if I look at game week 9, so if you just go to game week 9, right?
Yeah.
The problem with game week 9, and this is somewhere I'm taking a reference from last season where we had a lot of, you know, double game weeks, people getting into, you know, double Watford forwards, right? Captaining Watford assets, et cetera, et cetera, right? So yeah. Teams that you see here, obviously Leicester here continues. That's a Leicester and Brentford are the teams that continue to have good fixtures. That's a you know, advantage for me. I can take them now and I can sit and relax. Yeah. Then the next teams that you see is Southampton, you know, Newcastle, Aston Villa, Bournemouth, right? If I'm getting into a Wildcard 9 draft, I will ideally get sucked into these teams, right? Because you know that the teams with good fixtures, you know you have another Wildcard 8 weeks down the line, right?
Yeah.
You're like, why not take a punt, right? City have tough fixtures. Arsenal have tough fixtures. Liverpool have tough fixtures. Let me, you know, move out of them. Let me, you know, try something different. Let me be cool. Let me use this Wildcard. So, my worry with game week 9 wildcard is I will get sucked into these kind of players and that will backfire, right? So if I'm already not doing well, I want to, you know, create a differential squad, right? I want to make a good team and I can do it now. So let me do it now. My point is, why delay it, right? Why keep, you know, continuing that, increasing that gap with 100K or, you know, 200K people, right? And taking hits to finally balance your squad when you can do it now and just sit it out. I'm not going to look at these fixtures again at game week 9 and think, okay, Bournemouth is good, Aston Villa is good. Maybe I will take one or two players, right? Because this is not going to be a wildcard draft which will stay same over the next 20 years, right? I might twist it a bit, but I'll not go heavily there. I have my team set. I'm happy with my team now. And I'm looking forward to the next, you know, 7, 8, 10 fixtures. I know that this is a team which is expected to do well. Obviously, shit can happen, but things look good. Now, if you go back to the team, you'll see that, you know, I did not have... So, I sold off Son. I went to Madison. I sold off Bailey. I went to Rodrigo. Right. I sold off Pereira. I went to Martinelli. All this seems like a good, you know, moment. I had Dine and Trippier at back. Trippier I was very happy with, but given the fixtures, you know, very tough fixtures, right? So it makes sense for me to move them out to James and Cucurella, right, at the back.
Yeah.
And I had started with a 4.5 million goalkeeper, which is Melier. I knew it was a, you know, hold goalkeeper. At some point of time, I wanted to move out of him.
Mm-hmm.
I can see now that Henderson seems like a player who, at a 4.5 million price, you can, you know, go, you know, go for. He seems an informed goalkeeper.
Yeah.
So six moves that I have done for myself currently, and more or less this team's now looks, you know, something that I'll be happier with going into the next game week.
Yeah, I think it's a very an eye opening a point of view, because as you say, that is, if you shouldn't be stuck with the draft that you made if it's not performing. And that comparison at game week 9 is pretty interesting, because I haven't noticed that myself, because I thought, okay, that's an international break there. That's the best point to increase your team value and wild card. But it's not the case. And I wouldn't be comfortable, say, getting in an Aston Villa attacker, because Gerrard could rotate as much as possible. He's rotating as like the likes of Pep and Klopp, etc. So this is an eye-opening conversation, because taking hits at this point of time doesn't make sense, because you are again going back rather than coming forward, and you are cutting losses, like, because it's just one captaincy and a couple of hauls for you to close the gap between, say, like 3 million, 2 million, 4 million to the likes of 100k. So I think this draft, with the level of information that we have right now, pretty much covers everything, because you have Madison, he's an inform 8 million mid. I think I love the draft personally. Atia, how would you rate this draft? Yeah.
I mean, like, Sankalp just tempted me to use my wildcard. Well, even I'm somewhere around the 3.5 million mark, and I mean, I just saw that fixtures from game week 9 onwards now. I mean, like, we are all like in that box. You just went outside at the point.
Yeah.
The draft looks good. There's one comment I think Srini has posted. Why not a Brighton player? I mean, Brighton also have a couple of good games, especially in the defense, right? You can go with someone like Sanchez. I think you've made up your mind not to go with any 4.5 each defender. So that looks pretty much evident with all the offensive players. I mean, it's a good draft. You have Rodrigo, you have Harrison, and all those other alternative options. You have Martinelli. I mean, as to what we know so far in the last 2 weeks, this draft makes sense. And this is like the story 2 seasons back or 3 seasons when people went game week to wild card with James, Digne, Calvert-Lewin, and then the triple Everton lineup was, getting points. So maybe this could also turn out to be, what do we say? You're bowling a googly to all the other managers to climb up and catch up ranks. So I mean, it could go well. Let's hope for the best. That's what when you're wild carding, you'll have to look to close the gap. So it looks a good draft on paper, and we'll see whether he makes any more changes closer to the deadline.
Just this question, Uncle. The reason behind Hendo and over Sanchez, like Sanchez and even say to an extent Raya have really good fixtures. What was that thought process behind Hendo being your keeper?
Primarily because I think the problem with Brighton is they underperform a lot, with respect to metrics, right? And you will look at them, playing really, really well, and somehow they concede a silly goal, right? So I like Sanchez as a goalkeeper, on the pitch. On my FPL team, he's a constant worry because he always, whenever I've taken him also in past, know that he this one moment and they concede a goal. And we saw it against United as well, one kind of silly goal to concede, right? And the good thing with Nottingham is I saw the home match, right? And the way the home team, the crowd is behind the home team, right? And the team does look good, solid, right? So I know I can trust this player a bit more, especially on the home side of things, right? Again, it's a 4.5 million asset goalkeeper. I don't have the world's target, expectations from these players. I know that ideally over the season, they are going to go for 130 points, right? 130 to 140 points, and you should be happy. But this is a team that I've created for the next 6, 7 weeks, right? And I'm going to be careful and see how, where to modulate it. But for now, I just want to trust a team which seems strong. And looking at the fixtures, I felt that, the fixtures are something, it might be some away matches, some home matches, but I can predict a bit more from a fixtures. So if you look at, see, currently we have Everton, then you have Tottenham and Man City, but at the same time, you have Ward, who you can, a bit rotate. And then you again have, you see Bournemouth at home, right? Leeds away, and then again Fulham at home. So I see possibly 3 clean sheets here, right? And even if team, even if the team, fixtures where he does not get clean sheets, you see that he's a good goalkeeper. He'll give you save points, right? So those are the thoughts that I had in my mind. Obviously, I'm still thinking, it's a draft which is, say, 90% done, 10%, you changes with news about Perisic and all, right? But more or less, these are the thoughts which made me go towards Henderson.
Yeah, I think once again, a very good insight there because 2 home games against 2 promoted teams is going to be a massive bonus for Nottingham for this. That's how good managers pick fixtures, and Sankar has done the right thing here, I would say. Yeah, Brighton somehow concede at times when they are not supposed to concede, and he's somehow not in saves as well. Like Brighton generally don't concede a lot of chances, and they still end up conceding a goal. So it works a lot better in Hendo's favor, I would say. Yeah. So moving on, this is another key topic that's popular in the community. 2 popular preseason players in Neto and Bailey, both of them have not scored or assisted a goal so far, and managers have lost patience. It's being widely moved around, say being downgraded to Da Silva. He scored 2 goals. Aaronson has looked lively. Rodrigo, Ian's uncle, has him in his draft. Dewsbury Howell has scored again, but he's not an out-and-out attacker. Gross, he's done exceedingly well. He's topping the metrics for midfielders. Something that no one would have predicted at the start of the season towards game week 3. Aditya, what's your thoughts on, like, say, Bailey and the options around Bailey?
Yeah, I mean, Bailey is currently 4.9, so those who have been, you've already lost 0.1, it's gone. So Da Silva is someone who scored 2 goals with such a low XG. I think the XG was about 0.02 or something. I don't know.
0.07, like 2 goals.
Yes, yeah, somewhere, like one was a howler, other one went in somehow. So yes, for a fodder option is that is fine. Like if you consider Da Silva versus Andres Pereira, you know, you can just pick one. I mean, you can pick Pereira just to save a point on, let's go with whoever you want. But in terms of Bailey replacement, again, it depends what you're playing. Whether you're playing a 4-4-2 or something like that with a bench option, then yeah, you can have Da Silva and Andres Pereira. But if you're someone who's going to play a 5 midfield or so here and there with Pereira on the bench and having the fourth midfield rest, that price bracket, that's the question here. So Aaronson looked good in game week one. I think he's 5.5. That is one option. Kroos is obviously topping his numbers. So I think there was a few seasons back when Kroos, when he rejoined in, he was looking good and with the same amount of performances. Yeah. I think he's kind of playing the same way. I think, I'm not sure who takes the penalties. I think he takes the penalties, right? So that is one thing, an added advantage, but I don't know how frequently they'll get. Gordon looked good. Gordon looks to be the best Everton asset in terms of offensively. But overall, Everton are not looking that impressive. So that is one issue we have. And there are rumors that Chelsea are looking at him and all. I don't know how credible they are. Eze, good player, obviously has short potential, but injury is a problem. So where do you go here?
Yeah,
that's the same question. So Aaronson and Gross is probably the two I would say.
Yeah,
you will have to shell out more of 0.5, 0.6 to do that, or you have to go with fodder options and improve your defense.
Yeah,
offensive fullbacks. That's the only thing we can see at this point.
Yeah. So before I go to Sankalp, I'll in fact brief my position. I have Bailey in my team, and to be honest, none of them on the screen look promising to me. I tried to switch, downgrade one or two here and there, but no one actually convinced me. But when you put that 0.5 extra, go to 6 million range, like say you have Martinelli is rising in price, but that's fine. Rodrigo is there. There's a lot more value in that if you put Chelin 0.5 more, because Da Silva is again someone, Brentford's midfield is evolving. There's a lot more players coming in. Damsgaard is there. They actually go case by case. They played 4 at the back in the first game. They played 5 at the back against United. So probably we can think against the bigger teams that that'll be the case. So Da Silva is someone that's not nailed. So you're moving from an assert that's not nailed to another assert that's not nailed. So if you're putting him in the bench, then it's fine. But if you're looking to start one every week, I don't think Da Silva is a decent enough option. The same, if you go to Aaronson, the problem with Aaronson is that Rodrigo is even more better and he's on penalties if Bamford is injured. And the difference is 0.6 million. Same with Dewsbury Hall. There is Madison, who is the proven FPL asset. And you would rather have Madison than Dewsbury Hall if you are looking in a short-term 5-6 game week period. Gross is the only one that could do justice to what's being spoken at the moment. But unlike Aditya, he wrote off Palace, but I have a lot of hopes in Palace assets. Olise is coming back as well. Eze is someone that's playing in his favored role. He's now in the 10 role with Zaha on the wings and one of Edward going up front. And Olise should come in from the right. So again, but it's still early days to judge a Palace attacker. So I actually took the point drop yesterday night because I wasn't convinced somehow to move to any one of these guys last night. So I didn't want to rush the process as well because I had to take another hit to probably move Robbo out, which I'm still not confident as well. So let's see. But at the moment, I've put a collage of 7 players, but none of them convinced me. Sankalp, what was your thought process? Because I think you would still on a wild card would have thought about these players, but still ended up going Rodrigo and Martinelli. So what's your take on these guys?
Yeah, so that's the thing, right? You are not completely convinced by, you know, the returns of these players. So these are still punts, you know.
Yeah.
Players who can give you returns. For example, Aronson is someone that I had my eyes since I started watching Leeds pre-season matches.
Yeah.
I was really happy because he was the guy who was always making those second runs. You know, once Bamford went in, he was the guy who was moving in for the, you know, late cutbacks and all. So he looked like a good, you know, pick on paper, right? And someone conceptually makes sense, right? But you don't know so far. So far, he has not given any strong return. Maybe 1 week he will give us 13 point or 14 pointer and he will be like, I should have taken him. But you can predict that, right? I'm not very convinced with most of the other picks here. You know, Da Silva is someone who's on my bench for the last 2 weeks. Right?
Yeah.
I find it very difficult to go for him because, you know, Dahia Howler, right? Who could have predicted it, right? So who would have taken him, right? And at the same time, he was supposed to be benched in game week one and he was benched, right? So
yeah.
We still have that uncertainty around him. And now we have someone like Damsgaard coming in. right? While Damsgaard, while Thomas Frank has spoken of Damsgaard as an attacking midfielder or as a number eight, but I still don't know how this entire relationship is going to change. So it's someone that you have to again wait and watch, right? The player I really like in this list is Eze, but he's playing deeper, right? He's not playing as a winger. When he plays as a winger, he's closer to goal. He can score, he can assist, right? Now he can only assist when Crystal Palace have a counter attack, and he like he did it against Liverpool, right? But how many times will a team go all out? Only a team like Crystal Palace, City, and Arsenal. These are the only teams who will do it to you. Everyone else will sit back, right? So not really convinced by this entire price packet anymore. I'm completely disillusioned with my Bailey pick, and that was my entire reason to move out of this price bracket. Maybe someone will pick up, and at that point of time, maybe I can, downgrade someone like Rodrigo, right? Even Rodrigo, I know, is a player on form. That's the reason I'm going there. He need not be a guy who will score all six game weeks, right? Maybe another two game weeks, I'll have to sell him off. Yeah. And with those two game weeks extra information, I might come back to one of these guys. But as of now, it's no pick for me.
Yeah, the same as well. So that's a good enough conclusion. So the next one, this is another fairly discussed topic. The Liverpool double defense so far has not worked out well in FPL manager's favor. But having said that, I watched the game versus Palace, and Robertson was one of the pick of the players. If you would put, he passed the eye test, but he didn't pass the point scale. But a lot depends on Robbo, because the managers that's doubled up could move to someone like Cucurella, or say double up on City defense, or could downgrade to Reece James if they didn't have him. So it's kind of a tricky situation. And they play United, that United side that somehow has to score a goal. So there is still not a certainty of a clean sheet coming there. So what's your take, Althea? Like, so these two players are someone that they have proven FPL asserts, and they're still good from what we have seen so far in 2 weeks. Should managers stick with the duo, or do you think there's better value elsewhere by downgrading Robbo?
I mean, if there are a few managers or some section of managers who don't have Reece James and have probably double Liverpool defense, then I think overall, if you want to improve the strength of your squad, having players from different teams, then probably it would make sense again. Or maybe downgrading Robertson to upgrade someone like you're saying Bailey to a better player. So equally, if you're getting Cucurella, let's say, for Robertson, and then improving a midfield, right? You're getting two good players. So you need to see that in a shorter span of weeks and shorter span of fixtures, what is going to get you more points is what you need to look at. Bearing aside the United game, if you're confident with Liverpool the way they've played so far, and you are, you know, have a lot of faith and trust in them, then obviously Robertson is a player who can, in the longer stretch of game weeks, who will return points, but that is something we need to wait and watch. So either you can move out now or stick with him, because after the United game, they have a good run of 3-4 weeks. So, you know, things could go back to normal the way Liverpool perform, and he might start hauling 7, 8, 9, 10 pointers, and you might regret. So you need to see if you want to get a Chelsea defender, sorry, and you don't have anyone, maybe it would make sense. Or if you're downgrading Robbo to some other offensive player, so fullback, improving your midfield and other structure of your squad, you could do that. Else, I would just say wait and be patient.
Yeah, I think that's what I did myself as well. And Sankal, so I'll move on from here to Cucurella. I think we spoke a little bit, but we also hyped him up a bit in terms of over the last few days, because he looked really, really good. So what's your take on him? Because he's just 5 million and he's going to be most likely a wing back, at least for the short term, and potentially nailed in a centre back slot and on set pieces as well. Insane value, I would say. It goes back to the days of Trent and Robbo in the 5-5.5 range. I would even compare early days, but still making a point out there. And you bought him in to double defence on Chelsea, but you had the luxury of being on a wild card. What would you advise to a manager that's not on a wild card? It's not a priority slot, because Robbo still could come well. So how would you tackle this situation as a seasoned manager?
Very simple. Robertson is a player over season who gives you 180 points, right? He's a 7 million player who gives you 180 points.
Yeah.
Forget that he's a defender, right? He's a 7 million player who gives you 180 points. No other player does it for you, right? Very rarely will you find a 7 million midfielder or a forward who gives you 180 points, right?
Yeah.
So that's one thing. Second thing is they're next playing United's away match, but United have not scored so far, right? Directly, right? Then they have Bournemouth at home. Then they have Newcastle at home. Both are good teams or are turning out to be solid teams, defensive teams, but they're not good attacking teams, right? So Liverpool, and they're also not good counter-attacking teams, right? So that was the thing with Crystal Palace. They were a good counter-attacking team. That's what got Liverpool to concede. So then they have Everton away, which again, Everton is not a good attacking team, right? And then they have Wolves at home, again, not a good attacking team. And then they go to Chelsea, away, right? So you have four fixtures which can, four fixtures post the United match, which can very well give you four clean sheets, right? And the United match is a bonus on top of it, right? You never know what you can get out of it, right?
Yeah.
So, if you are already there, I would say I don't see, especially for people who are trying to go from Robo to Diaz, right? Saving money there, here, and trying to upgrade it to Diaz, I would say just don't do it. Just trust the pick you had right at the start of the season because he's a good player and he's also looking good. Alongside Diaz, the way he plays is completely different, right? Against Palace, like you said, he was almost playing as a forward in a couple of, transition plays, right? So you never know what you get. You might even get a 15-pointer. I could not go there currently, but at some point of time, I also know that, City will rotate. And so I have that Cancelo, place there. For Robo, I will never be, unhappy taking a Liverpool double with Trent and Robo. It's just that you have to time it out and know now the fixtures will get better. Just see, look, check that they are getting one clean sheet and the next week you can get them. That's all.
Yeah. That's fair enough conclusion and it's brought me a lot more calmness myself as well. Because as you see, the base is a 6-point clean sheet and 6 points. And if he does well in terms of attacking, that could go to 9, 12, say even 15 points all with the fixtures that you mentioned. So it's an easy hold, at least to me and at least what you advise. But again, it depends on maybe few structures and you don't have James and you want a Chelsea defender, then probably a route out. But it's again...
James is the only player for which I'll be okay because the upside is similar.
Similar. Yeah, exactly. Perfect. Yeah. So moving on to the next section. So it's a bit of differentials. I think we have touched base on a lot in the previous slides as well. So we'll quickly go through this. One team that caught our eyes and even in Sankalp's wildcard transition was Brentford. Their fixtures are up top. And Ivan Tooney is one, say Mbeumo is also an alternative if you're looking at a cheaper price point. But one player that actually really, really stood out for me is Rico Henry. He actually has an XGI of 0.6 in the first two games. He's got an assist as well. He was consistent last season too, but didn't get the FPL love he deserved. So he's someone I think could do well. But on the whole, what do you think of Brentford, Aditya? Because I remember you said you watched the full game against United as well. So that confidence should be oozing because 4-0 against a top six team is what teams like Brentford need to boost their confidence and they've got it. So what would you think of Brentford as? Because there are a lot of differentials in that. Yeah.
I mean, Ivan Tony, we know the way he played last season and even in our couple of preseason pods in the starting few episodes, we did mention that game week 3 would be the time for you to switch from Wilson to Tony or someone like that. That's the Watkins and Ings and all this. So this is the time for you to do. If you have those couple of players, you may just go ahead and do it. They did look good. They did look good. Rico Henry is, I think, a perfect Digne replacement if you were to get rid of him after this week. So you'll get 0.5 more. You won't get, I hope he doesn't give you negative points, but you can get into that 0.5 and move around with it elsewhere. So, yeah, they look good. But what United made a big mistake was after conceding the first goal, they were off the howler goal. Second goal also, they lost the complete stability. Then they went all out attack. Their high line was literally in the other half. And then they got battered in the break. So, that was a a rookie mistake and a very silly mistake wherein you just go all out and then you concede more two goals.
Yeah.
Where you could have probably let in and played. But yeah, they're looking good. They've always been a sort of bogey team for a couple of Premier League sides wherein they just trouble you out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, play proper football defensively, you know, strong, offensively, very smart. So this is a side that will improve week in, week out. And then with Damsgaard's arrival, you know, the so-called very hyped Euro fantasy asset of last time. So we'll see how they play. I mean, for the price range, I mean, seven, I think Tony is seven.
7.1,
right? Yeah, 7.1. Yeah. And he's 4.5, Rico Henry. There's nothing wrong with the price range. But the next couple of games, I mean, if you want to move out some players who are not performing, those are the two guys you can go out and try for the next few weeks.
Yeah, and a few more differentials to add. Like, we've discussed this, so I'm rushing through this. Madison is someone that Sankal spoke highly of. He was in our differentials right from the beginning as well. Rodrigo is someone that's still in the low-owned price bracket. Tooney is someone that's nailed. He's their talisman, and they've got good fixtures. Rico Henry is someone that you can definitely look into if you're looking at that 4.5 million bracket. And in fact, he's owned by less than 1% manager, so he falls in the ultra differential range as well. So moving over to the next is captaincy. This week is kind of... I actually like it this way because there's a lot more options to consider. It's not just Salah versus another player. This week, it's from the website's poll. So, Jesus is topping. So, for the second consecutive week, it's not Salah that's topping the votes. So, Jesus is first, Salah is second, Haaland is third. Managers that still have Kane and Son have still voted for them. So, it's where do you see captaincy this week, Sankal? Because as an Arsenal fan, Jesus seems to be a very tempting option. Maybe 1 week too late, probably. Yeah, what's your take on that? Yeah.
So, like I touched upon, you know, right at the start of the pod, Arsenal away and Arsenal home are two different things, right? I don't see a lot of upside with Jesus, but you can very well go there as a safe pick. I think he will have at least one goal involvement, you know, be it a goal or assist, he will be there involved somehow, right? The challenge here is we have four, you know, top picks, right? You have Gabriel Jesus, you have Salah, you have Haaland, you have Kane, right? Something is wrong with each of these picks, right? So, top three are all away matches, right? Salah goes United away and he's not on form. Haaland goes Newcastle away and Newcastle is a top six, you know, defensive team for me. When you look at defenses, they are already, you know, around the top six mark. They are very good defense. And Kane is off form, right? They are playing Wolves, right? So, nothing comes out as a really good pick, right? There's a narrative that you have to pick and go with, right?
Yeah.
All three make sense, right? As of now, my current pick is Salah, right? Primarily because, you know, he is Mo Salah. At the same time, because I expect United being at home, I expect them to, you know, attack, like you said. And Liverpool are one of the best pressing teams in the world, not even in the league. They're the best pressing team in the world. And if I don't think the United defense is that confident to handle press as things stand now.
Yeah.
So that's the reason I'm backing there. But I feel if you go anywhere, ideally, we should have some sort of goal involvement and hopefully a goal, not an assist like last week.
Yeah. Althea, your captaincy choice this week, it's a bit tricky. So what's
yeah, it's really tricky. Sorry. I mean, the top three are all away, right? They're all playing away games. And I mean, United is like, it's become a joke at this point.
Yeah.
With last season's result also with the same fixture. So, we don't know how those things will go. Newcastle have always troubled Man City, I think, at St. James Park. And it will be like KDB scores one long shot and then they win 1-0 or something. So, that's how those games have gone always. I think Jesus with Bournemouth is what I think I might go for. I think he's someone who can play against these, you know, physical teams and these teams that are really, you know, they mark you so tightly, right? You see what they did with Haaland, right? He had like, he made only like two passes or something, right? The entire game.
Yeah, yeah.
One turned out to be resist because they mark you very tightly. They don't give you that space.
Yeah.
So a Premier League acclimatized forward who knows these teams and all, I think is someone who will go with. Kane and Son, that could be a complete differential option. Like they might haul completely because they're playing a home game and they're kind of high in confidence, I'll say, when getting a point from the London Derby. So we don't know how things will go. And we see Chelsea here. I mean, Sterling against Leeds is not there at all here. He might turn out to be a good option. No, somebody has Sterling. Yeah. We never know. Because Leeds, despite playing well, they shipped in 2 goals last time. So there are a lot of options this week. I mean, this season is open for captaincy. We're not having that problem of if you've captained the wrong player, you get spent. We're not seeing that so
far. I think it adds to the fun this season because there's a lot more captaincy and it actually makes things interesting as we go because there's definitely 3-4 at least solid captaincy choices that's emerging every single week. So, in fact, I am thinking Jesus or Salah. But my heart is saying Jesus and brain is saying Salah. So let's see what happens later. The captaincy metrics again helps a little bit in calming myself as well. So yeah, the last part of the stream. So we'll cross the 1 hour mark, but we'll quickly go through the questions. So anyone that reads, just take I would see if we have covered a lot of it. Trent Robbo, we've discussed. If you make a triple transfer and mess up, will activate. Oh, that's a basic question. Yeah. If you wildcard, your hits will go off. Yeah. Best Nunes replacements other than Jesus, as who doesn't have him. So yeah, we covered up on Tooney. I think I would say Tooney as the best one. You guys?
I would say same thing.
Yeah. I actually tried a lot to get Tony into my wildcard draft as a third forward, but that meant I have to take Madison down to a 5.5 million midfielder and no one is there, right? That's a problem. I really like Tony.
Yeah. So I'll quickly Bailey replacements, you've touched base on that. Best replacement for Mount, I would say stick with Mount this week because he's someone that plays well against the smaller teams and Leeds seems to be a best option for him. I would say we all would say keep him for another week at least. Rico Henry, someone that we have seen, Mount, Brentford as such, we have spoken about as well. Mount again should be we worried about the rumours of Liverpool game getting postponed? I think there is nothing that you can control at the moment from that fixture. There are rumors that a heavy protest are planned and things like that. Only thing that you can do is that put the vice captain to another fixture if you're captaining Salah and then hope that game doesn't get turned off because everybody should at the end of the day own. So it's not a problem for you alone. It's a problem for everybody. Replacements for NATO, it's something that we covered on replacements for Bailey as well. So we can move there. So one is, should I play Nico Williams over Trippier and Saliba for game week 3? Interesting. So I'll go to Sankal because he has Endo. So again, but it's not a home game, it's an away game for them, but it's against Everton. So how do you weigh in Sankal that fixture?
I think given the fact that these are your cheaper assets, right? I would take the comfort of clean sheet over anything else. I think Arsenal have a clean sheet more or less locked. I mean, a good probability of getting a clean sheet there. If you have Saliba, I would just play him. Simple.
Yeah, simple. Okay. I think we've covered upon the questions. Few more from the chat. Thoughts on Trossard. So, he was supposed to be a good option, but he somehow not scored or assisted in the first 2 weeks. So, would you, Sankal, because at the same price point, you have Martinelli, you have Rodrigo, and you have him. I know what you're going to say. But
even if those two options did not exist, right? Trossard is just not a consistent asset, right? Yeah. He scores one game week, and he can score against Spurs. He can score against, City, Arsenal. But he can blank very well in most of the easiest matches, right? So, very difficult to predict as an FPL asset. And 6 million, like you said, now we have options available, right? So, if you have options available, why go there? Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, perfect. And the last question for the day is Cucurella or Walker. Aditya, who would you prefer amongst the two?
I think I'll go with Cucurella just for the set piece, abilities, and he's been there for that. So that additional responsibility gives you a lot of. I think Koulibaly scored a goal through his set piece, right? So that's why I think that matters. That gives the edge, I would say.
Yeah, perfect. So, any more questions? If someone that's watching, you can drop in. We'll hold for another 30 seconds before we wrap. I think there's one that asked about Andrea's fitness, but as of now, we have no info. Probably Silva's press conference would give light, but I would hope he would start so that that should be a big of a problem. He's still on a yellow flag. So, yeah. This last one is, do you think transferring in Mount to Diaz for a hit is worth it? I'm going to be priced out of the move soon with Mount due to a drop. I would say hold Mount. There is no need to take a hit to move him out just to avoid that 0.1 million being saved. So yeah, I think that should do. Yeah, this is a question for Sankal. If you have a wild card, would you take De Bruyne or Haaland?
So I have a wild card. I'm currently on Haaland, right? The thing is, like Pep's comments, you know, you keep reading Pep's comment, and he's, it seems that the entire team is now devoted to ensure that Haaland scores, right? And he's a finisher, right? So as long as they create, he will finish. There's nothing wrong with KDB move. To be honest, I really like KDB as an asset. He was one of the prime reasons, you know, I moved from a 2K to a 200 odd rank last season. So always have that good feeling associated with him. If you have him, nothing to worry. Primarily because I also see KDB as a more consistent asset. I think Haaland will be rested at some point of time. KDB seems completely fit, right? Has had a very strong preseason. So nothing wrong with that. But I think midfield options look reliably, you know, confident for me. If at some point of time I want to look to move out of Salah, I think KDB is the slot for me. As things stand now, Salah and Haaland as a, you know, combination works better because it's more balanced from a team point of view.
Yeah, perfect. I think, yeah, that's it. So we've talked a lot in, say, 65 minutes. We've covered pretty much everything that's needed for Game Week 3. And thanks, Satya. Thanks, Ankal, for coming along. It has been fun. We should be improving a lot more with the feedback that's coming in. So, thanks for joining in. And for everyone that's joined in, do follow Sankalp on Twitter at UnderstandingFootball. And Aditya is there as well at Aditya Iyer on Twitter. You can follow the blog. You can, please do feel free to subscribe. Drop your feedback. More than subscribers, is about the feedback so that we keep improving in the weeks to come. So thanks for joining along. This will be available as a podcast as well for listeners. And the chapters will be added for your own convenience to watch or listen later. Cheers, guys.